You are listening to the Take That Radio Network, a division of Take That Media, LLC, Los Angeles, California. Coming up next on the Take That Radio Network.
On this special Jimmy Rocks episode of Right This Way, Jimmy's sock puppet makes an appearance. We talk defining terrorism, and Jimmy goes auctioneer awesome on the debt ceiling. Stay tuned for Right This Way.
Don't touch that dial. You're locked on Take That Radio. Welcome to Right This Way, the weekly wrap-up show starring the hosts of Take That Radio. It's fun. It's enlightening. Looking for a common sense point of view in this topsy-turvy world we live in? You found it. And the fun begins right this way.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Right This Way. We have quite the gangbang this week. We have Ben Swenson from Strictly Right. We have Craig Ignatowitz from Brass Balls Radio. We have Jimmy Bice from the Delivery. And we have Kimberly Haney from, well, Twitter, frankly, and usually my Skype chat sessions. We also have myself. I am Wendy Sullivan, also Brass Balls Radio Girl on theright.com. I will let everybody else tell you what their blogs are. But in the meantime, I would like to start this show thanking our producer, Michael, for not recording the first 90 minutes of this show, which were actually quite stellar. We covered a series of topics. We covered Jimmy's sick brother, as well as his ability to talk to clothing. We covered Twitter and Follow Friday and how it must die. We covered John Boehner. We covered very many, very serious subjects. And our producer only just decided to start the show. So now we will probably talk about, I don't know, what are we going to talk about, guys? We already talked about everything and Mike didn't record it.
Wait, didn't you say you had a great subject to start with? Or was that
it? That was my subject, Jimmy. I would like to point out the fact that Mike never hits record when he should hit record. I've only been telling you this for 2.5 years and he hasn't learned yet. Michael, I know you're sitting back there and you're rolling your eyes and you're making that face. I'm very familiar with that face. And those of us that are in podcasting know what that face is. And those of you who are listening do not know the face, of course, because you're only listening. But by God, it's a good face. And he's making it right now. I'd like to go back and talk to Jimmy a little bit about his imaginary friend, because I think it's actually very, it's timely given what happened. We are recording today. It is Friday, July 29th. And it's timely given what's happened in Congress with the whole debt ceiling thing. Jimmy, would you tell us a little bit about your sock and your sock's opinions, I guess, on what's been going on in the past, I guess, 72 hours that this nonsense has been going on in Washington?
All right. You're talking about Saki the sock puppet.
And Saki the sock puppet.
Saki the sock puppet. He is the unofficial substitute spokes puppet for the White House and other large bureaucratic organizations. That's his official title.
He's the spokes puppet of the United States, the SPOTUS, if you
yes,
will.
Yes, SPOTUS, yes.
Right.
That's his job. And what happened was on a show a few months ago, I was talking about Robert Gibbs, who was the former sock puppet of the United States of America. And he was giving this press conference. He's the guy that came in before Jay Carney, who I have taken to refer to as the mouth of Sauron. And Gibbs was just absolutely blowing this thing. I mean, the first two rows of the White House press corps were covered in plastic like it was a Gallagher show because of all the flop sweat Gibbs was throwing off the stage at him. And it was so bad, and I decided to just off the cuff to say, look, this is so bad that you could get someone hiding behind the podium with a sock puppet to give a better press conference. And then I just started doing a voice. And the voice was Saki, and I decided it was going to be Saki the sock puppet, who is the new substitute White House spokes puppet. And so Saki, and it just kind of happened. It was a little 5-minute thing that I did. It was improvised. And in the live chat room that I do on Ustream, and then afterwards on Twitter, and then in my email, people started contacting me and said, Jim, I love it. That was hilarious. You've got to do that again. You've got to bring Saki back again. So later on I did. I brought Psaki back as the unofficial spokespuppet of the World Health Organization to tell us how all our cell phones were going to probably maybe kill us. And then just last week I brought him back because Jay Carney said that if you questioned whether the president had a debt ceiling plan, you were a Republican tool.
So, oh, very nice. I think he's a tool, actually. I actually prefer Robert Gibbs to him. Thank you very much.
So that's where
I prefer the sock, honestly.
The sock does have it in the intelligence category.
There you go. The sock for the win.
Is anybody voting for the sock in 2012? Anybody? I mean, Kimberly and I were talking the other day about how Herman Cain, lovely as he is, will show up to the opening of a paper bag. I mean, this guy will go out there and talk about anything anytime. He's like the rent is too damn high guy.
I'd like to vote. No, come on now.
I'd like
come
to vote
on, he's not
the sock.
That bad.
If anybody is interested in running the sock, I will put up the first $100 to run the freaking sock.
Excuse me. I'd like to make an official statement. This is Psaki.
Go ahead, Psaki.
My official statement is, if nominated, I will not accept, and if elected, I will not serve. And you're all racists.
Because we choose the sock over Herman Cain.
I'm a white sock.
He's a white sock. He's probably
got it's a racist sock.
It's probably one of those work socks that's got like the red rim around the top. So it's not just a white sock. It's a white sock with a red neck, right? So
no, I'm a completely white sock.
Oh,
I can trace my family tree back to the original Spalding factory of 1946. I've gone on SocksHistory.com and traced my family tree. And Herman Cain also, because he opposes our fine president, is also a racist.
Of course. And racist record has 5 A's.
Always 5 A's.
Always 5 A's.
Six A's, you're also racist. That's how
SocksHistory.com.
SocksHistory.com.
I'm going out to register that domain, too.
Anybody who would like to stage an intervention for Jimmy and his sock, contact me, rightgirl, at gmail.com.
Intervention? Socky's getting his own gigs on podcasts. Socky is my path for riches.
Hey,
Rush Limbaugh doesn't have a sock puppet. I'm one up on him.
No, he has Mark Stein, honey.
Oh.
Yes, he does. Wait. Wendy,
yes.
Collective sigh. Okay.
Yeah, the women had to think about Mark Stein for a minute. Yeah. But that said, is anybody else? I'm sure we're all not huge fans of the Daily Show and the Colbert Report. But is anybody else thinking of the scene on the Daily Show when Jon Stewart brings out the Muppet? That's supposed to represent, what was the name of that dude that was just last head of the RNC? The black dude, he was a complete...
Michael Steele.
That's him. And he had this Muppet that would do Michael Steele, because he actually looks like a Muppet. Although, as my ex-boyfriend said, he looked like the guy that did the Humpty Dance. But
the dude from the Digital Underground?
Yes. Michael Steele.
Very cool.
Am I wrong? Is he wrong? I don't think he's wrong. But yeah, he had this Muppet that would do Michael Steele. And that's all I can think of when I think of Jimmy talking to his freaking hand that's got a sock on it. I'm either thinking he's a creative genius that should be on late night television, or we need to talk to a doctor.
Hey, look, you laugh, but Jim Henson got stinking rich.
Yes, he did.
Exactly. Either television or a home. Either way, I'm not sure which way to go. I think you're a very intelligent guy. I think you really have a potential for you and your sock. But if it doesn't work out, I will be the first one to sign the commitment papers. It's as simple as that, Jimmy. And you know why? It's because I care.
I think I'll be the first one to go. Gladly. Happily. After this debt ceiling crap this week.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm the sane guy for talking to a sock puppet, okay? John Boehner's been talking to Harry Reid. I'm talking to a sock puppet. I get the better.
You're having a more intelligent conversation. It's as simple as that.
At least a sock puppet will talk to me.
And come up with a decent idea.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear Harry Reid's quote? I think it was today. Something about the only compromise that there is mine. That's what Harry Reid said.
I saw that. Yeah. I just saw that like an hour ago, because
Harry Reid's main claim to fame is opening his mouth and sticking his foot in it.
Yeah, he was the guy that said Obama spoke with a what was it, a clean?
No, dialect. I think that was
Joe Biden. He said he only used a Negro dialect in certain cases or something.
Yeah, he was a clean, well spoken Negro with no Negro dialect or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of them coloreds. I wonder if he has to use a separate water fountain in the White House.
Wasn't Harry Reid the same guy who said that that we needed to spend a lot of money on air conditioning because the tourists stink?
That might have been Harry because he's from Nevada, so he probably
I don't know, but
good right to say that. I'm sorry, I've been to Vegas. They fucking stink.
I hate Vegas.
He was the cowboy poetry guy, though, that's for sure.
He was the cowboy poetry guy.
He needed money for cowboy poetry or whatever.
Yes, the thing
that always gets me about those kind of quotes, though, that like his Obama quote is, I mean, here we are where, you know, you're doing a SPOTUS, you know, if you oppose the president, you're a racist. But that's not actually the reason it's funny is because it's actually true. I mean, if you opposed Obamacare, you did it on racial reasons alone. I mean, if you mention that the fact that Obama likes to play basketball, you must be a racist. And here we have Harry Reid.
It's been racism since November 2000. Well, frankly, May 2008. It's been racism. Right. It has been racism the whole way. If you didn't like the bailout, you were a racist. If you didn't like healthcare, especially, you were a racist. If you didn't like cap and trade, you were a racist. If you didn't, whatever he was trying to push, if you didn't like it, you were a racist.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's been that way since day one, since before day one, since he was running.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Kim.
No, I was going to say, I love when people accuse me of being racist on Twitter. I immediately throw up my nephew's picture, my son-in-law. Throw them right up there, baby. Yeah, come on and tell me I'm a racist. Please
well,
do.
Well, my big thing is when I get called an anti-Semite. You know.
Yeah, I know. You have the same thing that I do. It's like, excuse me?
When I'm
a racist? Please tell me
when you're the one standing out in front of the Israeli consulate, making a human shield and having bottles and rocks thrown at you by angry Arabs, we'll talk about my anti-Semitism. But before that day comes, I will ask you to hold your peace. Really? The only time you could accuse me of anti-Semitism was probably the day I was being heavily paid, and I mean heavily paid, by an organization out of Washington, D.C., to put on hijab and film the kind of people that show up on the wrong side of the street for these different rallies.
I remember that, Wendy. I was terrified for you.
That was a very scary day, but at the same time, one of the most exciting days of my life. I had hijab over my head and neck. It was done in an Egyptian way. It was very loose. You know, you could see the hair underneath, but it was covering my head. It was just like an abaya. It was crossed over. And, I had my camera, and basically my goal was to be a very excited member of the far left Palestinian supporting people in Toronto. And I was taking pictures, and one young girl, she couldn't have been more than 17 or 18. She had a picture or she had this scarf. It was a Hezbollah scarf. It was yellow. It had the green writing on it. And in green, it had an image of Nasrallah. And in Canada, Hezbollah is a banned terrorist organization. You are not allowed to fly their flag. You're not allowed to raise money for them. They are as banned in Canada as the Nazi Party is in Germany these days.
As they should be.
As they should be. So I'm here, and I walk up to her, and I'm like, and her friends were chanting, Viva, Viva Intifada, or something like that. Viva, viva Palestina, viva, viva Intifada, something like that. And I walked up to her and her friends, and I was like, oh my God, you're so brave to be flying that flag. Show me, it's beautiful. And I took a picture of her holding her flag. All of this was going down to an anti-terrorist organization in Washington, D.C. That was the only day you could accuse me of anti-Semitism and get away with it.
Yep.
And as it was, I'm standing there on one side of a police barrier. On the other side of a police barrier is a bunch of friends of mine. And one of them goes to call out to me and gets a sharp little Kathy Shadle elbow right in the chest, right in the ribs. I mean, she only stands 4'11", so anywhere she's going to elbow you is going to freaking hurt, I guarantee you. So he gets this sharp little Shadle elbow as he yells out to me, and she leans over and she says something, and he shuts up immediately, and he's got this terrified look on his face because she knew I was going to be there.
Right.
And she screams across the police barrier to me. She calls me a Muslim bitch or something like that. And I lean over and I call her an infidel whore. She's like, I hope you die. I'm like, I hope you die. And she comes back. She's like, lunch. And I said, give me an hour. So, you know, you want to accuse me of anti-Semitism, you can either pick that day or shut the fuck up. Just like anybody that wants to pick on Obama, if you call them a racist, you better check their bona fides first. Because chances are, you know, like Kimberly, for example, you're barking up the wrong tree. It's not a racism thing. It's a he's retarded thing.
Absolutely. So. What are they thinking? Well, apparently something's breaking. Anybody paying attention?
I haven't looked at Twitter in at least 4 minutes. What's going on, Kim?
I've got Fox on mute. I'm just looking at the ticker, breaking news. It's just the same stuff. Reed speaking.
That's breaking. Not interested. Reed is speaking. That's breaking.
Yeah, that's it. That's breaking news. Yee.
I would say more interesting breaking news might be, has anybody been following what's been happening in Fort Hood down in Texas?
No.
Yeah.
They need to not even try him. They need to put him right to the front of the line for the fucking firing squad.
There's new stuff.
This is the Dal Hassan case,
no,
obviously.
No,
no? It's, AWOL soldier.
It's not, it's, Ben. It's actually a situation. There was an AWOL Muslim soldier.
Okay. American soldier,
American
of
Muslim
religion. Thank you.
Was in, I can't remember what state he started out in. I think it was South Carolina or something like that. And okay. He filed for conscientious objector status, even though this is the part that pisses me off. If you joined the military after 2001 and you decide
you have no standing as a conscientious objector.
None. Thank you.
Shut up. Exactly. Yeah. You have no standing. And anyway, he's a young guy, so he clearly joined after 2001. I mean, it's been a decade. Come on. Mm-hmm. So he joined the military, and he filed for conscientious objector after going AWOL. He was picked up, gone AWOL, which is a big deal, and he was brought back, and he said, I cannot be sent over there to fight my brethren. And they were like, okay, well, fine, we'll grant it, which is rare, actually, considering the amount of American soldiers that are currently up here in Kanatistan, hiding out from the American military. It's a big deal that they actually granted it. But perhaps they only granted it because of the issues that they've had with guys fragging in Iraq or guys like Nadal Hassan or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a safety issue for the other soldiers. I don't think that they were cutting too many slack.
It didn't work because he packed up his truck and he drove out to Texas. He went to Fort Hood. He put plans in place. He bought the fertilizer. And he was going to bomb the shit out
everything.
Of Fort Hood. And they picked him up beforehand. Somebody caught wind of this,
well,
I guess.
What happened was the gun shop.
Now,
what happened is this guy went into a gun shop.
Thank you.
That was
and,
it.
Went into a gun shop and tried to buy several guns and some 1 pound... or 6 pounds of smokeless gunpowder, and the guy at the gun shop, who was a former cop, thought it was unusual, told his supervisor that this guy gave him the willies, and they went and called the cops. So this is interesting because he was he filed for conscientious objector status.
So it was a fluke.
They were reviewing this, and while they were reviewing this, they also found child pornography on his government computer, and then he went AWOL.
But what is interesting about this is, was that not the same gun shop that the first guy, Nadal, bought the guns at? That's what I read.
Was it?
It was the same gun shop. He went to the exact same gun store in Killeen, Texas.
That might have been the gut reaction then.
Yeah.
If it hadn't been the same gun shop, there's a possibility it might not have had the same gut reaction to the employees.
Right.
And thank God for that. So he goes and he tries to buy the crap. They investigate him, and the next thing you know, he's got this whole plot to shoot up Fort Hood, just like the first guy did. Which I assume we'll get to after the break, because we are going to take a short break. But my question, and I'd like to hear from all of you, especially because I'm the foreigner in all of this, is why do we keep insisting on letting the enemy within the military? So we'll take a quick break. I'm getting to it before you have to, Ben. And we'll be back right after this.
Hi, this is Emily Richards for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. One person's negligence shattered my life in a single instant. You see, my little sister Annie was killed by a drunk driver. Please, remember those you love. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
We are back. This is Right This Way. I am Jimmy Weiss, host of the Delivery Podcast and writer at the Sundry Shack blog. We're going to talk about we're going to keep talking about this new Fort Hood killing attempt. I don't know what you call it.
It was a terror plot.
You know something?
Yeah, it was a terror plot.
I'm not entirely sure it was a terror plot, because from what I've seen in this guy wasn't trying to make a political point. He's just a guy who hates people who don't think like he does. He's not.
That sounds like Islam right there, sweetheart.
I understand that, but understand that terrorism has a political goal. It's a goal to achieve a political movement to force people into thinking some other way. And
right.
What we're seeing from a lot of these guys, I'm not necessarily willing to call them. These guys aren't even sophisticated enough to be terrorists. They're not trying to.
I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, because you're
a bunch of people. They are nascent mass murderers.
So do you want to play then the lone wolf game? I mean, okay, I'll play that game in certain circumstances, but is that the card you're willing to play right now, the lone wolf card?
No. I fully believe that he is in the orbit of people who are Islamist. But the more I look at this, the more I think that what we're seeing here in the United States is not terrorism. It is much like it was in 9/11. These guys are not trying to change a political system. They're not necessarily trying to make a political statement. I think they're engaged in acts of war. I think they're engaged in acts of murder.
Hang on, just one second. Okay. You're saying, Jimmy, that 9/11 was not a terrorist action? You're saying they weren't trying to change us politically?
I'm saying they did change us politically.
What the
statements that came out were not, we do this to force the United States of America to do certain things. It was, we hate that the United States is doing this. We hate that the United States are doing that. The United States is, in fact, our enemy, and we are going to destroy it.
Yeah, but the underlying assumption is that's war.
That's murder. That's what that is.
Yeah, but Jimmy, sorry, go ahead, Ben, and I'll take
it. I was just going to say that's just the expression. The underlying current in all of this has been, and I think always will be, the fact that they want to change our political system. They hate the fact that we allow people to speak freely. They hate the fact that we have women that wear bikinis. It is a political motivation at its core, and how it's expressed is not always clear.
Oh, honey, look at me, honey. Yeah. I hate people that wear bikinis just because I can't. But still, you know.
No, except that they're not attempting to affect a political change. They are attempting to destroy the system. That's war. That's an open hostility.
But you know what? By changing the political system, Jimmy, they do ruin the system. Because look at what's happened since 9/11. We've had the I can't remember what it's called, the whole wiretap, the Patriot Act. We had the Patriot Act. We've had the abuse, the
TSA.
Virtual rape of
look
the TSA.
Look at what you have to do just to take a flight somewhere, people.
That's just domestic, let alone international.
You're right. And you know something? Osama bin Laden did not intend for any of that to happen. He certainly didn't shrug his
shoulders when it did.
You're right. You're right. And that was, for him, a very happy unintended consequence of an outright act of war against the United States.
His intent was to take down our economic system, as I understand it. It was to put a pinprick in the heart. Well, more than a week. Frankly, honestly, I think we're still seeing ripples from what happened on 9/11 economically, so I think that in that regard, he did achieve his goals in a certain sense.
I think, honest to God, Ben, globally, we're seeing ripples from 9/11 economically when it comes to tourism dollars, when it comes to international trade. We are, in fact, dealing with the ripples of 9/11. But just for a quick second, if you'll indulge me, I'd like to read from the New York Times. They wrote an article on this gentleman, and I just want to read a quick paragraph. Prosecutors charged the soldier, Private First Class Nasser Jason Abdo. I love the middle name, Jason. It's very Jewish-Irish, you know? With possession of an unregistered destructive device, accusing him of intending to assemble and detonate two bombs inside an unspecified restaurant. Private Abdo was arrested by Killeen police officers on Wednesday at his hotel room, just 2 miles from the entrance to the base. In his backpack and in his room, the police found a .40 caliber handgun, ammunition, razor blades, and bomb-making material, including 6 bottles of smokeless gunpowder, shotgun shells and pellets, 2 clocks, 2 spools of auto wire, an electric drill, and 2 pressure cookers, the criminal complaint said. Investigators also discovered a handwritten shopping list of bomb-making components and an article entitled, I love this, Make a Bomb in the Kitchen of Your Mom. I love that because it shows it is an Arabic or Persian language website. Absolutely. That they have run through Google Translate. Make a bomb in the kitchen of your mom. Somebody is using an auto translation system.
That's also CeeLo Green's next album title, by the way.
But Jimmy, sorry, go ahead, Ben.
I was just going to say this Fox story here says that, I mean, he had jihadist materials with him. I mean, the source said that the bomb making materials and methodology came, quote, straight out of what's called Inspire, which apparently is a terrorist magazine.
Yes.
And an Al Qaeda explosive course manual. So, I mean, the guy, to me, it just seems like it's a clear cut case.
It's the 21st century version of the anarchist cookbook.
Yeah, exactly.
21st century version just happens to have a Muhammadic spin on it. But the point I wanted to, or the question basically I wanted to ask is, Jimmy, according to you, the terrorists, what is their goal? Is it to kill or is it to change the political landscape? Because they have done both.
It is to conquer, period. It is to conquer. You guys have read enough about this. You know this. It would not be enough if tomorrow we pulled out completely from Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Iran.
Oh, we could and give we up left. Oil and pick up bicycles tomorrow.
That's
and
correct.
Make
if we did all of that and left the what they consider the Islamic world completely alone, it would not end.
Honest to God, they pissed us
not,
for giving them money anymore.
Their
like we
goal is not. Their goal is not strictly to change our political system. Their goal is to conquer us. It is to.
Well, isn't conquering changing your political system?
Yes. I mean, if you want to rule, much the way that Hitler wanted to change the political system of Britain. Yes. But
I'm going to interject. I'm going to shut you both up for a quick second. We're going to take a very fast break. We're going to finish this up when we come back from the break. And then we're going to talk about this bloody cut-cat balance crap that everybody wants to talk about. I'm sorry, I'm the Canadian. I'm bored by it. In any case, we'll be back right after this break.
Hey, it's me, your piggy bank. Remember when you were a little kid? all the dimes and quarters in my back. Yeah, that was good times. Good times. Now, lately, I gotta be honest, you've been ignoring me. Money's been slipping through your hands like a greased pig. Get it? Because I'm a... Anyway, I know how it is. Now that you get a real paycheck, it's nice to have stuff. You'll start saving money next year. Well, I hate to tell you, but good saving habits start now. Put just 20 bucks in the bank a month. Make your own coffee at home instead of that latte every morning. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Those changes alone could save you thousands of dollars a year. Come on, I'm your piggy bank. We can be together again, me and you, the special times. Anyway, if you don't want me to cry anymore, feed me. Go to feedthepig.org for more ideas on how to save. Feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Right this way. We're so right, it's wrong.
Welcome back, kittens. We are Right This Way. We are the usual gang. This time we are Jimmy Bice from The Delivery. We are Kimberly Haney from Twitter, Craig Ignatowitz from Brass Balls Radio. I almost forgot that. God forbid. Ben Swenson from Strictly Right and myself, Wendy Sullivan, also Brass Balls Radio, which is why it was so shocking. Jimmy, before the break, I'm out in the kitchen now. I've moved from the studio, aka my bed, to the kitchen so as I can mix myself another margarita. But I'd like you to continue telling us why you're wrong. I mean, why you think the Fort Hood guy is, you know, like Ben said in the break, it's a question of semantics. Is it conquest? I had asked you previously, is it murder? You know, do they want a body count or do they want political change? Because they've achieved both. You're saying it's conquest. I'm not quite sure what you mean by conquest, because when I say body count or political change, to me, that sounds like conquest. And I think to Ben, it sounds like the same. I don't know about Kim. I don't know about Craig. But Jimmy, carry on. What you were saying.
All right, here's what I'm saying. Look at the Provisional Irish Republican Army, the Provo IRA, which before Al-Qaeda came on the scene was one of the biggest terrorist groups in the world. They had a very simple goal, two of them actually. Goal number one was to bring about a socialist republic in United Ireland.
Okay, as Wendy Sullivan, I take personal offense to this, but carry on.
Goal number two was to remove Northern Ireland from the United Kingdom. They wanted an independent United Ireland that they ran completely free from UK influence. That's a political change. If the IRA had been attacking Britain with the goal of taking over Britain and having a united Britain that was Britain and Ireland together, that is an act of war. Those two things are different. Al-Qaeda does not want us to simply let them alone and let them have their own united Muslim country somewhere, or
they
the United Muslim
over,
Empire.
They want to take over Britain.
They want to take over Britain and Europe and the United States. They want to take over the country and run it their way. That's so, not merely a political change at terrorist mood. That is an act of war.
I think I'm actually starting to see what you're... Okay, yeah, me too, Ben.
Yeah. I think what you're actually saying is it's broader than terrorism, almost that terrorism isn't a strong enough word for what they're trying to do. I think it's still semantics.
Civilians. They're attacking civilians, for example. They're attacking civilians much away, and this is not a perfect analogy, so please don't crush me on it. They're attacking civilians much in the same way that, for example, the Allies bombed Dresden.
I was going to say,
because they think it is a more effective way to get a surrender.
Jimmy, you had previously made mention of the Nazi occupation and overtaking of Europe. And I think, given what you've explained, it's starting to make a little bit more sense to me. And just tell me if I'm wrong, paraphrasing what you're saying. But basically, the Germans were not happy to get the Jews out of Germany. They needed to take over Europe and clean them out of there, too. Is that correct?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But I think... And again, question of semantics, like Ben said during the break, I think we're all pretty much clear on the fact that Islam doesn't want to stay in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
I think we already know they want to come everywhere else. I mean, look at Dearborn. Look at Minneapolis.
Yeah.
You know, these places are already infiltrated and inundated with Islam, such as it stands today. I don't think, you know, parts of Britain are becoming Sharia zones. I don't know if anybody else followed this information on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You
and
saw
France. Do you know about France? They have, they,
well,
in France now,
had
they
that
have
they take, years now.
Yeah. They take over the streets and they during their Friday prayers, and there's certain neighborhoods.
Yes,
I saw a story with
mosques.
One lady that. Yeah. Well, no, there's certain neighborhoods. There's this one lady who's owned a store. Her family has owned a store in this neighborhood for you know, decade upon decade, and they're trying to force her out. They constantly are breaking her windows and trying to kick her out, and she said, I'm not going to go. You know, they've scared everybody else out of here, but this is, I belong here and I'm going to stay. But I mean, they have, yeah, exactly. They've taken over the city essentially.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm saying it's not, I think it's a little bit dangerous to simply say it's terrorism, because we tend to look at terrorism and war in two different ways.
Yeah.
If we look at this as a war, then let's go back to the World War II analogy. All right. Does anybody really think that the American people would have accepted a de facto Nazi zone in Dearborn, Michigan, where Nazis
I think you're right.
Hitler and did all that stuff.
Here's where I think the most important point you're making is, and that is that it's dangerous to put Islamo-fascists, terrorists, whatever you want to call them, in the same category as ELF.
Yes.
Goes around and takes down radio antennas and keys up, you know, SUVs. I mean, I think you're right in that there is an important distinction between those two. And I don't know that we have a word other than Islamist for what it is that they are.
Right. Well, and the big hit.
I think you're hitting pretty close, Ben.
If they were a nation, it would be fine. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you and I can do this all night. We have before. But to talk over Ben, I don't think he's actually, he may be very close to something there. We need a new word for it, because what Islam is doing, you're calling it an act of war, but at one point you did say conquest. I think you may be very close with that, because Islam is in fact a religion of conquest. If you go back, mm-hmm. not just through their holy books, which are the Quran and the Hadith, both of which, before anybody sends the hate mail, yes, I have read 3 different translations of each. Don't fuck with me. But even the dogs are pissed off at the suggestion that I do not, in fact, know what I'm talking about.
Galaxian bug.
Yeah, seriously. But I have read the translations. I am familiar with them. I am still in the process of learning the Arabic to read them in their originals. But if you go back and read Islamic history as well, and I had the opportunity, thankfully, via the Jewish Tribune to sit in on a 4-day a seminar at Ryerson University here in Toronto on Islamic history, which was taught by what was considered a radical Palestinian, who I have to say, strangely enough, gave us a very balanced and fair history of Islam, which was not like, kill the Jews, you know, which I expected it to be. It was very, very fair. And it is, in fact, a religion of conquest. For all time, at one point, one of my arguments last week in discussing the whole Norway thing, which I talked about on Brass Balls Radio, and the fact that I was in fact wrong. I mean, so many of us were. We jumped to one conclusion and we were wrong about what happened in Oslo. But talking about Islamic history, I had said that Constantinople, of course, and Eastern Europe, Byzantine, were conquered. They were not simply like, oh, let's all convert to Islam. They were conquered. The will of Islam is to either kill the infidel, convert the infidel, or enslave the infidel. And I think Jimmy is in fact onto something when he says the word conquest. Whether or not he says it's an act of war is something different. But when he says that it is conquest, he's really closer to the truth, because if you look around America, if you look around Europe, Europe is currently bringing in Sharia areas, like we talked about with France and England, different areas, no-go zones for the infidel. They are also bringing in Sharia law. Sharia banking, yeah. We have here in Canada. I don't know if you've adopted it in the United States.
It's in a couple of major banking. Yeah. Bank of America has Sharia banking.
Basically, what it means, Sharia banking, is that no interest is paid, accrued, or offered. So you get a mortgage or whatever through a Sharia loan. You're not paying interest on it, but you're also not accruing interest on anything that you invest.
Hey, Wendy.
Yep.
I think one of the reasons that we have such a difficult time finding a good word for this is because
It's new?
Well, yeah, because when we think of war, we think of nation states going at it. And Islamism is not a nation state. So what we do is we look for the nearest thing that we've seen that encompasses what we have, which is terrorism, and we put it under the terrorist banner.
Closer to it when you say conquer, because if you do look to history, to the past,
right.
If you look to the past, you can pull the word conquer from, as I had said before, Turkey, for example, or Eastern Europe, the whole Eastern Russia, Chechenian region. These were originally Orthodox countries, Constantinople, places like that. It has happened in the past with us and Islam, and they have conquered us, which is, of course, where they bring up the whole, well, you know, the Catholic Church slaughtered a bunch of Muslims. Yeah, we know, the Crusades. And again, why did they do that? Oh, right, because you took over 5 or 6 of our countries. We got real pissed about that. And that's why we're in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places today, too, because you've taken over our countries. You've attacked us. You've attacked us on our home soil. You've got Dearborn. You've got Minneapolis. And you have all of these other places. You have parts of France. And you will continue to attack us. And we will continue to retaliate until somebody wins. And frankly, guys, I hope to God it's us.
Yeah.
Because I've worn the hijab. It ain't pretty. My hair is lovely. My tits are too fantastic.
You knew it was coming.
Wendy, it's why I say that we have to look at this, even though it's not the perfect analogy, we have to look at this as it is, in fact, an act of war. Even though it's not a country going after us, the object is the same. They want to conquer us. The end state is going to be the same thing.
Can I call BS on something real quick though?
Sure.
Because you defined him differently to begin with. So is this guy part of the conquest? Is this guy part of whatever the word that we want to use is? Because that's where this whole thing started.
I think he is, because he wants to show up. He wants to show up and start killing a bunch of people in the name of his side. But his goal isn't really to affect a traditional goal of a terrorist. His goal is to affect a traditional goal of a guerrilla soldier, which is to seed chaos and discord and destruction and kill a bunch of people.
But regardless, we could say the same about Muhammad Atta, because whether or not that was his intention, that was certainly the outcome.
Okay, so as he was being led out of the courtroom, he yells three things. Iraq 2006, he yells the name of the 14-year-old Iraqi girl that was raped and murdered in 2006 by a U.S. soldier, and then he shouted Nidal Hassan, Fort Hood, 2009.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay, so he's clearly, I mean, he's, and this was in the press, this is not a shock to anybody.
This was influenced. Today in court.
Yes, influenced by Nidal Hassan, not Absolutely. A question to anybody.
And a follower of that same
Anwar al-Awlaki.
Thank you, Jimmy. That's it. I can't ever remember that guy's name ever.
I don't think, like, I mean, if I were to go down to ground zero and start shooting every friggin' hot dog vendor who happened to be of Muslim descent, I don't think that would shock anybody either. And the fact that this dude went down to Fort Hood.
He went to Killeen. Have any of y'all ever been to Killeen?
Thankfully not. Tell us
teeny,
about
teeny, teeny, tiny little town. Okay.
So it's like a town that serves no other purpose than to service the military
base. That's it. That's
Killeen. Killeen is where that lady had that shooting spree in the unrelated to that, in the restaurant, the Ruby's restaurant.
It was Luby's cafeteria. Yeah. I was living there. I was actually living just a little bit south of there when all that went down back in the Luby's days. But my ex-husband's aunt, who we loved dearly, and God bless her, still living, she lived in Killeen, so we would make the trek there regularly, 2, 3, 4 times a year. So there's nothing there, people. So, you know, for this cat to go to Killeen and go to the same freaking gun store, what an idiot.
Yeah, it's like mine on North Dakota.
Kirks are stupid. And you could tell this is the girl who's married to a cop. It's like, what?
If it weren't for stupid crooks, cops wouldn't have a job.
He's got a point, Kim. All right, guys, we're going to wrap up. We're going to, yeah, go ahead, Ben. You might as well give me that fabulous voice of yours. I was going to say, we're going to come back after this break. We're going to let Ben introduce the next segment, if for no other reason than I like listening to him, and frankly, fuck the rest of you. And we're going to talk more about this whole cap and balance and all that stuff when we come back. We're going to stop talking about the Muslims because God knows it keeps me awake at night. Ladies and gentlemen, stay with us. We'll be back right after this.
Avast ye homeowners! Are ye plagued by foreclosure? Well, here at Jim, Lad, and Matey, we can stop your foreclosure now. We're a mortgage rescue company, and for the small fee of everything you hold dear, we will negotiate with your lender on your behalf, and we guarantee results.
Guarantee results!
Aye, the bird speaks the truth. Them's be the benefits of working with a true professional. So don't dilly-dally about. Listen to the wise counsel of your old pal, Honest Jim.
He can't be trusted!
Call Jim, Lad, and Matey at 1-800-YAR-YAR. That's 1-800-YAR-YAR-YAR.
If you're facing foreclosure, make sure you're talking to the right people. Speak with HUD-approved housing counselors free of charge at 888-995-HOPE. That's 888-995-HOPE. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
Right this way. Picking on stupid the old-fashioned way. We put it on the internet for millions to enjoy.
Welcome back to Right This Way. I'm Ben Swenson, joined by Jimmy Bice, Craig Ignatowitz, Kimberly Haney, and Wendy Sullivan, and Wendy's dog. we have, apparently, we're going to have to talk about this debt crap that's been going on.
That's a collective sigh of, just shoot me now.
This has been one of the most frustrating stories, even as a news consumer, not just sort of like a podcaster or broadcaster, but as a news consumer, this story is just so frustrating to me because it moves at a snail's pace. It's all very boring sort of inside baseball stuff. And, you know, the economy of the free world sort of hangs in the balance. So, I mean,
Ben, I just want to say, again, it is July 29th when we're recording this. It's probably not going to go live until the 2nd or 3rd of August. But I just want to point out that, for example, this morning, I saw the announcement that Obama was going to make a speech in regards to this whole palaver, for lack of a better American.
Really? He hardly ever does that.
I know, shocking.
Why is on television more than Anderson Cooper?
Shut the only front
like
door.
One bazillionth as attractive. But anyway, so I left the house this morning just after that announcement was made, but he hadn't actually gone on air, and I was running errands all day. So if anybody would like to fill in the blanks as to what exactly the leader of the free world had to say.
He started a Twitter war. Did you not know that?
As you were saying, yes, he went on and he spammed the shit out of Twitter. But something came of that after. I mean, beyond the spam, beyond the fact that he was actually reported at one point for having been a spammer, he something came of it. Like, what is the outcome? Right now, it is 11:18 p.m. on July 29th. We are recording right this way. What is the outcome? What happened while I was out running errands today? Did the cap, nothing. Whatever bill happen? Cap,
yes, what? And kinda. Here's the deal.
All right, go ahead.
All right. One, not the other, right?
All right, guys, I swear, I need like 1 minute and I will blitz through it.
Okay, go.
All right. Once upon a time, there was a debt ceiling deal. The House Republicans came together and did something called cap, cut, and balance, which would raise the debt ceiling, cut certain amounts of taxes off, cap the overall level of government spending, and slowly bring it down over a period of 7 years to 19% of GDP, and then put on the table for a future vote a balanced budget amendment. That went through the House, passed through the House with some Democratic support. Went to the Senate where Harry Reid tabled it, which means he set it over to the side. He didn't actually kill it. It can be brought up later. Barack Obama and Harry Reid both then went back out publicly and said the Republicans won't compromise. They won't do a plan. Now, neither Harry Reid nor Barack Obama have put forth a plan. So John Boehner went back to work on a compromise bill. John Boehner built a compromise bill. Compromise bill called Boehner 1.0. Boehner 1.0 was the Tea Party. Jesus, God, this thing sucks. Because Boehner 1.0 did this. Boehner 1.0 raised the debt ceiling by $2.7 trillion and then did a two-step process. Process number one, an immediate $1 trillion or a little less once the CBO got done with it in budget cuts, not cuts to the overall budget, but cuts to the baseline increase over 10 years, which was about $100 billion a year. The second set would be $1.8 billion in cuts over 10 years. That would be decided by a bipartisan commission of 12 people, which would be decided by the four leaders of the House, Pelosi, Boehner, McConnell, and Reid. Everybody freaked. They went back to the drawing board and came up with Boehner 2.0. Boehner 2.0 sucked as hard as Boehner 1.0. So Boehner went back to the drawing board. Meanwhile, Barack Obama is calling press conferences every single freaking day to basically say, this thing sucks and you guys need to compromise. Does he have a plan? No. Back to the House. John Boehner comes up with Boehner 3.0. Boehner 3.0 is basically Boehner 1.0 and 2.0 with a balanced budget amendment rider tacked in the middle of it. It's like cap, cut, and balance, but not quite. So Boehner 3.0 actually successfully passes the House, but just barely. It passes the House and it goes to the Senate, where Harry Reid promptly says, we're going to vote on it. No, we're not going to vote on it. Yes, we are going to vote on it. No, we're not going to vote on it. So they're not going to vote on it.
Who's on first?
What people think is going to happen is that what they did is they then voted to table Boehner 3.0. So they set it off to the side. What they believe is going to happen now, this negotiation is going to happen between the House and the Senate so that Boehner and Reid, the Republicans and Democrats will come together. What they believe is going to happen now is that they will actually bring out Boehner 3.0, kill it with a vote, kill it. Then Reid will hollow it out, take his guts out like it was a beast on Hoth that you could stick Luke Skywalker in, hollow it out, then Harry Reid will put in his mystery plan. Harry Reid's mystery plan is basically Boehner 1.0 with fewer cuts. So Harry Reid is going to holler out Boehner 3.0, stuff in Reid 1.0, pass it through the Senate, then send it back to the House for a conference committee where the two houses will put panels together and they'll decide what's going to be voted on for the final bill. That bill will go to Barack Obama, who has said to Boehner 1.0, Boehner 2.0, Boehner 3.0, Reid 1.0, and cap, cut, and balance that he will veto everything. Now, Republicans are afraid because the president has said, he has promised, he has sworn, I will veto any of those bills principally. And we all know how good Barack Obama is about keeping his promises, don't we? As we look toward Gitmo, which is still open.
Okay, so so this
was worth the price of admission.
This edition of Micro Machine News was brought to you by Jimmy Bice Jr. and the SPOTUS of the United States, Sock Puppet. And apparently mid monologue there, Barack Obama actually hacked into Jimmy's account and caused us to hear nothing but digital noise. But it was funny enough, even just as the noise, that we let it continue.
It was so
I would love to hear Socky say all that.
I think digital noise was Saki, Craig.
Oh, for the love of God, don't make me do it again. Please don't make me do it again. I just summed up 5 days of debt ceiling negotiation in like 2 minutes. Don't make me do it again.
Brilliant. I'm just saying. That was brilliant.
I'm serious.
Rock for a week, and you took care of it in 37 seconds. Amazing.
Oh, Kim, it might have felt like 37 seconds to you, but I think it was actually 3.5 minutes. He asked for 2. I think he got 3.5.
Well, no, he asked
for one.
I forgot about Reed 1.0 in the conference committee. So,
Jimmy, we're
going to have to be done here in just a second, but Jimmy, I've got to know, was that off the cuff or were you reading from something there?
No, sir. That was completely off the cuff. I had notes.
God,
ladies and gentlemen, the brilliance of Jimmy Bias Jr. is just one of the many reasons that Take That Media rocks.
And
thanks for joining us,
gentlemen, for Jimmy.
That's right.
Oh my God, Jimmy, I'm going to transcribe that for you so that you could just like use that as a post. That was brilliant.
I didn't mean to chew up the last segment with that. I'm sorry.
That was worth the price of admission.
Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Right This Way. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. And tune in. I think we're going to have another Right This Way next week. So tune in next Friday. We'll see you all then.
This edition of Right This Way was produced by the Take That Radio Studios in Los Angeles, California. Thanks for hanging out with the Take That Gang here on the Right This Way show. All wardrobes provided by DIY Industries. All weaponry is optional. The opinions expressed on this show most definitely reflect the views of this station and its management. Join us next week when we'll probably piss somebody else off. Hey, it's what we do. This has been a production of TakeThatRadio.com. Thanks for listening.
This is where you get the good shit.
Can you tell us why you're hanging out with a sock?
Sock puppet of the United States, SCOTUS.
I'm sorry, there's been a report that Saki has a better contract than me now.
If we have been recording, I'm going to send a strongly worded letter to the production company.
I just have to write about idiots spending all our money in Congress. I don't know how the hell I'm going to do that.
Now, Jimmy, are you able to type with a fucking sock on your hand?
A little red rum sock puppet of murder. John Boehner just bent over and picked up the soap for Harry Reid. You're worried about me?
Politically conservative, Second Amendment loving, Christian husband and father, golf and zombies top off the list. Oh, yeah. University of
I'm not only not going to fall Friday, I'm going to block your ass.
As soon as I'm done single-handedly killing the 1.2 billion Muslims on the planet, I plan to go after a fellow named Misha. When the left behind people come, like Jesus comes down, and there's bed details, and left behind Jesus with lasers coming from his eyes, they will still be finding pieces.
Maybe it's follow Friday that it's tag along Tuesday.
Double knock sodomy Saturday.
I'm not knocking sodomy Saturday. Who's knocking sodomy Saturday?
I want Wendy to say sodomy Saturday 3 times.
But according to the note we just got, our producer has once again not been recording what we thought was the show.
Welcome to Right This Way. Take That Media's all hands. Did somebody just hang up?
No, but I'm pretty sure Mike hasn't hit record yet. I'm gonna stab you. Can you please get sodomized Kim back on the line?
Hey, math lady, this show's not in halves.
What the fuck is your name then?
Jimmy.
I was gonna say, if you ever get pegged for anything, just blame it on SCOTUS.
I have a penis, Ben. It is 15
inches. She does, in fact, have a penis. Ben.
It's just in a drawer, that's all.
Sorry, did you just cock up a lung?
Jimmy, you hold a sock. Let's be honest. Jimmy goes auctioneer awesome.
Thank you. There you go. That's it.
So tell us, Kim, was it the tits that did it for you?
Please, it's a Jimmy Bay sandwich.
We started with the sock. We went on to terrorism, and then we went pure freaking auctioneer on the debt ceiling.